For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
And a very good morning to you. I hope you're well. It is, well, it's just after 8 a.m. That is British summertime here in Manchester. It is the 9th, is it? No, it's the 9th of June. It is Friday. The 9th of June, 8 a.m. as I said here in the UK. Thank you for joining me wherever you happen to be in the world. David Icke will join me in a minute, live from the Isle of Wight. We do have a result in the UK general election for you, and that result is chaos. There is a hung parliament, meaning that no party has secured enough seats for an overall majority to form a government and to govern henceforth. You need 326 seats for an overall majority. There have been calls for Theresa May to quit, unsurprisingly, from people like Jeremy Corbyn, Tim Farron, Caroline Lucas, but also from Conservative MP Anna Soubry. Although the BBC report right now, it must be said, that Conservative Party sources are saying is there will be no resignation, that May has no intention of resigning. Labour improved on their result in 2015 significantly. There was also the largest young voter turnout since 1992, probably down to Labour's promise to abolish tuition fees. I think that was undoubtedly the motivation there. UKIP have been wiped out, completely wiped out. Maybe more on that a bit later on. A slight improvement for the Liberal Democrats. But remember, before the election, Tim Farron, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, said there would be absolutely no coalition. He said under no circumstances would the Liberal Democrats enter a coalition with any party. If he's telling the truth, and he might not be, of course, when has the politician ever told the truth? But if he is, there is no way Jeremy Corbyn will form any minority coalition government. It just will not happen. The Scottish National result, that's the Scottish National Party result, is down in Scotland. The Tories did very well there as well. The Democratic Unionist Party in Northern Ireland have improved on their last result. They've got 10 seats. That might very well be significant because the DUPs are a Brexit-supporting party. If they do a deal with the Conservatives, there could be a Conservative DUP coalition government. So it's a chaotic result after a chaotic campaign which saw two terrorist attacks, a bizarre Conservative Party manifesto, utterly bizarre in fact. Nick Clegg, Lib Dem, lost his seat in Sheffield. The SNP's lost Angus Robertson and Alex Salmond. They're gone. The Home Secretary Amber Rudd only barely held her seat in Hastings and Rye after a recount there. We were interested in that because Nicholas Wilson, Mr. Ethical, stood against her. Nicholas did pretty well. It's already being said on national television and radio that a second EU referendum is no longer a remote possibility. There will be a Conservative Party announcement at 10 a.m. UK time this morning, but BBC sources saying Theresa May will not resign. Theresa May will not resign. Will she hang on? Will she enter negotiations with the DUP and or others? And as the morning has rumbled on, talk of Boris Johnson replacing Theresa May has grown louder and louder. Should we take all of that with a pinch of salt even? We'll see. But it's time to go live to the Isle of Wight and to join my friend and colleague David Icke, who's been up since the small hours of the morning watching all of this unfold as well. Good morning, David.
Morning, Richie. My Skype's been crashing this morning. We are fine now.
I noticed that. Yeah. So I was rambling on. I was windbagging on there. Not for the
That's
first.
It's not like you, Rich.
It's not like me at all. No. Yeah. I saw your Skype was on the blink there momentarily, David. Well, straight over to you. What have you made of what you've seen so far?
Well, first of all, for people listening to this on the recording, we're talking at just after 8 o'clock in the morning. So much may have happened in the meantime. I think there's some good things and I think there's some bad things. And the worst thing, I think, is that a Brexit worth having is now pretty much highly, highly, to say the least, unlikely. There has been efforts from the time of the referendum. In fact, I put something on the internet within pretty much the first hour after the referendum result, saying this is just the start, because there's two fundamentals that are crucial to really taking power back in the way society is structured in relation to this country, and in the other one, relation to the world. One is that we de-link ourselves from control by dark suit bureaucrats in Brussels at a commission which is surrounded by, I mean, the figure sounds fantastic. I checked it out many times, surrounded by something like 30,000 corporate lobbyists. It's an extraordinary figure. So we need to de-link ourselves from that. Otherwise, everything else is irrelevant. You know, when you have 60-odd% and more of laws and regulations in this country, starting out not through Parliament or even within these borders, but through bureaucrats in Brussels, you can stand on election platforms as much as you like and say, we'll do this and we'll do that and we'll do the other, but not if European law overrules British law, as it does, and your proposals are at odds with European law. Forget it, mate. You can say it all you like. It's not going to happen. And the situation we're in now is, and I've got no brief for Theresa May. I think she's appalling. And I think her attacks on freedom are appalling, which I'll come to as we go along. But I'm looking at it from a dispassionate point of view. What we have now is a situation where negotiating a Brexit with the dark suits is going to be virtually impossible to get anything worth having. We've got, Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party talking about the fact that they will definitely not leave the single market. They will consider keeping in the customs union. They reject a no deal outcome, no set cap on migration levels, and other things they've agreed to already. So if you're going to stay in the single market and you're going to have all these other things that you say, well, they're a gimme, then frankly, what is there to negotiate? And once you're in a situation where the dark suits know that, they're going to say, of course they are. Okay, you want to stay in the single market? This is what you got to do to stay in the single market. And it will be a list of things which will basically mean it ain't even worth coming out.
You're still in the union,
in terms of what you get. So on that level today, the referendum result of the leaving of the European Union has been basically completely negated, because if May stayed in office, I don't see how she personally can. I mean, the Tories will obviously try, being the biggest party, but I don't see how she can morally. But of course, we all know that using the word moral and politicians in the same sentence is never advisable. So we'll see how that goes. But her negotiating position is gone. Her ability to get anything other than what the what's called the Progressive Alliance or coalition of other parties want is impossible virtually. So we're looking at, in the best way of looking at it, a very, very diluted, watered down Brexit, which will leave the dark suits with enormous power over what happens in Britain. There's some good things about what's happened, which I'll come to, or potentially good things, because, you know, when a politician says we're going to do this, it doesn't mean they are. I mean, that's the lesson of history. But I think, Richard, before we move on to the good things, it's worth in relation to this Brexit, just asking the question. You have Theresa May. She had a workable majority. She said over and over again that she would not have an election before the negotiations to leave the European Union were complete.
That's right.
And then out of nowhere, she calls an election. Now, on the face of it, as it was played at the time, you could say, oh, she thinks she's in a really strong position now. And Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party are nowhere. So now's the time. It's a political decision for the benefit of the Conservative Party. That's how it was played at the time. And that would have been okay had what followed not been such a catastrophic election campaign. I put a meme on the internet the other day, which basically said if Theresa May was trying to throw the election, she would do exactly what she's doing. And my son Gareth said when the Tory manifesto was released, basically, are they trying to throw the election? Because what was in that manifesto was a suicide note for vast numbers of what would be natural conservative voters, old people with money and old people with not a lot of money, but have a conservative background of voting.
Yeah, it's, homeowners and the like. You're right, 100%. Yeah,
many do.
Yeah,
and she basically gave them the finger in the manifesto. And then she starts backtracking on this and backtracking on that. And suddenly you had a Theresa May for much of the campaign who looked like a terrified little girl who had nothing to say, who had no credible answers to anything. And, you know, Jeremy Corbyn, for all his faults, actually in Parliament, is a very, very good campaigner. It's what that's been his lifeblood, all his political career, activism and campaigning. And basically, the Conservative Party was blown away in terms of its predicted massive majority when the campaign started. So you can, you know, I'm not saying anything at the moment. When we're looking at these things and discussing these things, we need to be dispassionate and look at the evidence, look at the facts, and then let the facts build. But it is a strange combination that we're looking at here, which is that the establishment was shocked by the Brexit vote. It threw a spanner in the works of their whole plan because the European Union is meant to absorb more countries, not lose them. We had a situation where Theresa May had got herself in a position and put herself in a position where she was absolutely going to lead this Brexit means Brexit. Suddenly an election is called out of nowhere and not necessary. And that because she's already got it through Parliament to trigger the article that started the negotiations.
Article 50, the mandate was there. You're 100% yeah, right. The mandate was there. Right. Yeah.
And then what immediately followed was one of the most catastrophic election campaigns since the Labour manifesto under Michael Foot long ago, which was described as the longest suicide note in history. So when you put those things together and the outcome, again, look at outcomes. The outcome has been that Brexit means Brexit, in a few weeks has become absolutely Brexit doesn't mean Brexit. It means at best Brexit light and very, very light. So these are the things that we really ought to be just looking at. And pondering on and seeing where this goes, because it's an amazing coincidence that
this is really important stuff. This, David is right. The mandate was there for Theresa May to take the country into the negotiations on the 19th of June with the European Union. despite the attempt in the High Court to knock it back, she was able to get a huge majority in Parliament to support the triggering of Article 50, and she could have just gotten on with it. As David said, seven times May said there wouldn't be a general election. It wouldn't, you don't have to be, you know, a conspiracy theorist to conclude that May was pretty certain that there wouldn't be any general election until 2020, that she would carry on with the negotiations. What we're looking at today is we're looking at the possibility, and this won't happen for a few days, maybe even a week or two, we're looking at the possibility of a Conservative Democratic Unionist Party coalition, because they're very much in favour of Brexit, either headed up by Theresa May or by another Conservative Party front bencher. So all the smart money should be on a Conservative DUP coalition. But what that might lead to, David, is because of what happened overnight, that might lead to so you might have a period then over the summer. Things will quieten down a little bit. But as you get into the autumn and you head into to the later part of this year, you're going to have increasing calls for a second European Union referendum, aren't you? It's inevitable now that we're going to hear a lot about that, regardless of whether I'm right or wrong in terms of the Conservative DUP alliance or some other sort of alliance, because Jeremy Corbyn cannot form a government. It's ludicrous. He doesn't have the numbers to make a substantial or to make an even decent minority government. Tim Farron has been adamant that there's no way they will form a coalition with anybody, no matter what, come hell or high water. So either there's another general election, which isn't impossible, or there is a Conservative DUP alliance or with others, which is going to be spun as there's been a big turn against Brexit. Therefore, we might have to consider putting this to the public again, as we saw in Denmark, as we saw in Ireland. What do you think?
Well, that's where they'll definitely want to go. But I was reading a quote by the DUP leader this morning.
Arlene Foster, right?
Where they're putting forward the idea that they believe in Brexit, but this spokeswoman, as it was saying that a soft Brexit was what they wanted, and they certainly did not want a hard border with the Republic of Ireland. So wherever you look, Rich, we're looking at a Brexit that is still leaving us massively controlled and dictated to from Brussels. I mean, Jean-Claude Juncker, or Jean-Claude Drunker, as he is accurately referred to, must be on his second bottle now, and it's only 8:20, because all the power has been handed in that direction. But like I say, there are some good things in this, but good things only if people do what they say they'll do. Because the Tory majority has been so cut to, not even a majority, it means that the plans that Theresa May had, and she has massive form and history of this as Home Secretary, to bring in very substantial regulation of the internet and government control of the internet. Now we'll see whether this progressive alliance is really going to stand for freedom or not, because she must not be allowed to get that through. And you would think that the progressive parties, as they call themselves, I'm not calling them that, I don't think they are mostly, but they call themselves that. They, unfortunately, are becoming another tyranny when it comes to human freedom. I mean, it's the progressive side of politics that is driving politically the politically correct agenda. It's them that, in terms of the Labour Party, that did not oppose, as they should have done, Theresa May's Snooper's Charter, one of the most outrageous invasions of privacy that we've seen. with the powers it gives for surveillance and internet surveillance of what people do. The Labour Party did not oppose that as they should have done and made it far more difficult to get through. So, you know, on this whole progressive side, the more I've seen the progressive mindset in action, the more, while it has good things to say about social justice and what have you, and I'm all for that, I've been all my life, but there's a part of this progressive mindset that is very, very authoritarian. Of course, it's obsessed with climate change, which is an excuse to change society, which isn't actually happening. It's basically okay with mass migration, which is not, let's not talk about race and background here. Let's talk about numbers. You can't keep bringing ever more people into a country where everyone is seeking jobs and homes and what have you, and not have problems, and not have economic problems, not have everyone suffering from the fact that there's just too many in very densely populated areas that are seeking to make a living. I mean, if you keep pouring water into a jug, it's going to overflow. And there needs to be some sense with this and some common sense based purely on mathematics and economics, if you want to look at it at that level. And the thing about the progressive mindset, and I would bring Jeremy Corbyn into this, is that it's very good at opposing and very loud at opposing what it doesn't agree with, including freedom of speech through political correctness. But it's not very good at looking at itself and questioning itself. What you get within this progressive mindset is people very, very reluctant to criticize anything within the progressive mindset, if you follow where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Which means it's not something that looks in the mirror and says, well, you know, have we gone too far here? You know, it's have I got something?
We might just be losing David briefly there. He said there was an issue or two with his Skype connection.
Hello?
You're back now. You're back in the room. You faded away just a second ago.
That was Rich. I've obviously been looking all over the internet and what have you, what's happening this morning. And of all people, Nikki Campbell of Radio 5 Live has just started talking on one of the
right, very good. That's you've it's called having a load of windows open. You've got all the technical skills of me.
Oh, you must be
none.
Joking,
yeah, right? you're exactly like me. David Icke is on the line, folks.
I'm one step above the typewriter.
That's about it. Yeah, the old word processor. David is in the middle of writing a book, folks, which will be out sometime in the summer. He's live from the Isle of Wight. The election result is basically no result. A hung parliament with the Conservative Party with the largest amount of seats. There will be an announcement. David quite rightly pointed out earlier on, it's exactly 24 minutes past 8 as we do this. Things will happen during the day. Don't think that he wasn't on top of what was happening. It's a fluid situation. The Labour Party are triumphalist about what's happened. They have increased their seat gain by 25, maybe 30 from Ed Miliband, but they're certainly in no position to form a government, likely to be the Conservatives and the DUP. But then again, what do I know? I've been wrong all the time. David was talking about progressives and the things that they are in favour of, the good things they are in favour of, but their support of political correctness and their refusal to accept the immigration issue. David, you mentioned leaving in a city the size of Newcastle every year, but at the same time underfunding vital public services, which is madness.
Yeah, and also out of the progressive mindset comes identity politics, which is basically me politics. You know, what's in it for me? So, you know, that progressive way of looking at things, as they call themselves progressive, a word, of course, it came out of America, where basically they operate in the same way. needs to be looked at and watched, because it has very, very authoritarian tendencies, while masquerading often as standing for freedom and justice. But there's some good things that have come out of this. Like I say, if they vehemently oppose these attacks on internet freedom, which were clearly being planned, then that's a good outcome. It's going to be much more difficult for them to get wars and such like through, even if they have a coalition. Of course, countries like Saudi Arabia are going to come under a great deal more spotlight, with a great deal more power in terms of members of parliament to push the case. And I just hope that Jeremy Corbyn stops shape-shifting, frankly, because I said earlier, he's an outstanding campaigner. And he obviously won the Labour Party leadership with a great campaign. He then went into office in Parliament and basically became another person, a shadow of the person who was campaigning. He then had to run for office again and won again. Again, the campaigner came out. And then he went back and pretty much it was the same. And then this election's come along and the campaigner's come out and he's done very well. He absolutely blew Theresa May away in most of the campaign.
Yeah.
Now, Jeremy, don't shapeshift again, mate, right? Go into Parliament and be the person who campaigns. Be the radical. Say the unsayable. Speak the unthinkable. And he's never got a better chance now with the wave that he is now on as a result of not so much how many seats he's got, but how many seats he's got compared with how many they were saying he
would
get.
That's right.
Right? That difference between, he's a disaster and the Labour Party is going to basically disappear, to what has been achieved, is such a vast spectrum that it's created this wave of Jeremy's a genius, right? So use it, man. Don't go back to Jeremy the stand back and don't upset anybody kind of trying to be all things to all men and women. You can't be, so don't be.
This
be
is a good point, David.
Campaigning, and then we might have a chance of really having some real truth spoken in Parliament in relation to foreign policy, overseas wars, and what's really going on. But this is the point, Rich, for Jeremy Corbyn to be relevant in these ongoing times. He's got to start saying the unsayable and saying the unthinkable. He's got to start talking about the outrageous injustice and criminal activity of allowing private banks to create the currency by lending people money that doesn't exist and charging interest on it. He's got to start calling people out and naming names and really, really going for it. Because there's no point otherwise. There's no point in going on trying to keep everyone happy. And all these attacks on him by his own MPs and these plots on him, this result has blown them out of the water as well. So he has this tremendous opportunity now to really be the radical he says he is.
This is really important stuff, David. This is really important stuff, because despite what I said, and I'm right, he's in no position to form a government. It doesn't matter. He's in a tremendously much better position than he was in a couple of weeks ago. He can now form a genuine and real opposition to the government if he wants to. He doesn't have to be in power. You know, I might turn out to be wrong. The Lib Dems and others might, you know, go back on what they said, and there might be some shenanigans still to come, but it's likely he won't be in government. But he could form a really good opposition, because his position now as leader of the Labour Party is cemented. You know, if he'd have got wiped out the way it had been predicted, he would have gone, and who knows what would have happened after that. But now, nobody within his own tranche of backbench MPs can really go after him. So he does have the opportunity to talk, for example, about the terror funding report, David, which you've been talking about on davidicke.com, which apparently hangs the Saudis out to dry for funding and arming terrorism, and probably highlights the part the British intelligence services has in helping the Saudis do that, which we're not getting. There's a lot of things, as well as you said, the money thing, which is massive, that he could do. But not to be big, not to be an idiot, I'm just going to say, because I have to say it, because I've got a big mouth, I don't see it. But I hope I'm wrong.
Well, that's why I say, you know, we can only see what happens.
Yeah. But
what I've outlined there is the opportunity that he now has, and we'll see if he takes it or not. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, I was brought up in Leicester in the 1950s and onwards in a Labour Party a family. My father, mother always voted Labour, wouldn't even consider voting anything else. Although my father was very streetwise on one level about the fact that the people like Harold Wilson and all these others were you know, not what they said they were, and were not to be trusted. But voting anything but Labour was unthinkable. So I was brought up with that mindset. And you know, as you move through your life and you see things, you start to realise that actually what I call in Phantom Self the postage stamp consensus, which is a tiny range of beliefs in society, in reality, and in finance, in everything. That postage stamp consensus is where all the political parties stand. And what you have is a Labour Party that is looking at the postage stamp from one angle, and you have a Tory party looking at it from the other, etc. But it's still the postage stamp. And the Labour Party and the Tory party, and I have to say, these other progressives too, are actually all on the postage stamp. They're not involved in new thinking. They're involved still in the old thinking in so many ways. And for society to change for the better, the old thinking that's created this has got to go. Simple example. Another good thing coming out of this is that the opportunity is there. And I keep saying that because you're right. Are they going to take it or not? The opportunity is there to stop the incessant and blatantly long-term planned privatization of the National Health Service. But if we stay in the old thinking, which is Labour Party spend more on the NHS, Tory Party spend less on the NHS, or push the NHS to privatization, then we ain't going to go anywhere. The new thinking says, not how many people are we treating and how much money are we spending to do it, but why are so many people ill? That's what the new thinking says. And it starts to look at why they are. Why are people going for these diseases? Why is dementia vastly on the increase? Why is cancer on the increase? Why are people suffering in such vast numbers from stress-related problems and mental health problems on an increasing scale? Why is it happening? Let's look at the causes of that. And the more we deal with the causes, the less people are going to get ill, the fewer people are going to need treatment, the less the pressure on the National Health Service, and so on. And the new thinking says, in terms of health, is the scalpel and the drug the only option to meeting the challenge of illness and disease, is it? Are we going to allow the pharmaceutical cartel to dictate the way that we are treated and even enshrine it in law, when people being sick is how they make their billions, not by people being well? This is the new thinking. Now, are we going to see that? Well, I'd be very pleased to see it, but I'm not holding my breath. This is what I mean by the postage stamp, Rich. Yeah. And it's easy at a time like this. And, you know, I'm really glad that austerity has the opportunity to be challenged now, that the deletions of freedom have the opportunity to be challenged now, although many of these freedoms are deleting freedom of expression through political correctness, which the progressive coalition, quote, is all in favor of, vehemently so in many cases. But it's easy to get excited when, you know, you've seen a result like this that wasn't expected. But let's just take a deep breath and look at what we are looking at. And that is still the old thinking. And the old thinking is on the postage stamp. And the postage stamp is how we got here. In fact, the postage stamp is where we are. And so there are some good things about what's happened overnight. But let's not get, you know, too carried away here, because it's still the old way of looking at things.
Do us a favor, David.
It needs to change.
Do us a favor. Let me take a 60-second break. It's only a 60-second break. David is going to stay with us till the top of the hour. I have a question for David that's going to require a detailed answer, and it's an important question. I think I've been thinking about it all night. David Icke, live from the Isle of Wight, broken off from putting the finishing touches to his forthcoming book, which will hopefully be out in the summer. He's in the middle of the Worldwide Wake Up Tour as well. Go to the worldwidewakeup.com, the worldwidewakeuptour.com. Go to davidicke.com for details on where David is going to be. There's also some events planned around the launch of the book in London, Edinburgh and Manchester, which should be fantastic. We might get a word on those before the end. But a 60-second break, and then I have a question for David when we come back.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Welcome back. Special program live with you this morning. It's 21 minutes to the top of the hour to 9 a.m. Again, just to point out, if you catch this on David's YouTube channel or our YouTube channel later on, things might have happened since then. There is a hung parliament. The Conservative Party expected to fall somewhere around 10, maybe 12 seats short of an overall majority. Labour have done well, much better than anticipated. Calls for Theresa May's resignation. She said that's not going to happen, or at least the BBC are reporting that people around her have said that's not going to happen. Of course, that might change a bit later on. David Icke is with us. Go to davidicke.com. Bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. There will be a lot of important info on there today. David Icke, here's the question, and it's going to require a detailed answer. And I think there's nobody better placed than you to answer this, because you've been writing about finance and the reality of banking for as long as I've known you and way beyond that. Right, so Tony Blair was a war criminal, a Rothschild Zionist and a madman. Of course he was. And so was his lieutenant, Gordon Brown. But what they did do was they spent a load of money on the National Health Service. And when they were in power, we didn't have assessment hearings. We didn't have people getting stopped. You know, their benefits weren't stopped, and people who are sick and disabled weren't going to hearings where they were being humiliated and degraded. Now, again, for listeners who might be new to the programme, Tony Blair is a detestable murderer who should be in prison for the rest of his life. The point I'm going to make is, I think David makes some excellent points when he talks about probably the fundamental decency of somebody like Jeremy Corbyn. And people today who have had to put up with the nonsense, and if you follow davidicke.com, you'll see regularly stories of people desperately in need of help and assistance, deserving of it, but who don't get it because of the tyrannical assessment system that was brought in because of austerity. So Corbyn, if he was to be leader of, if he was to lead the government, say, with a rainbow coalition, it's very, very, very unlikely, but if he was to do so, as a decent bloke, much or pretty much all of this would stop. But David, in the paradigm that we exist in, wouldn't we have the same situation in a few years' time because of the crazy, insane, upside-down world we have, whereby another government would come in and they would say, the Labour Party left a note for us to say there's no money left, because ultimately, as you've been writing for 25 years, it all comes down to banking and borrowing money from central banks. This is hugely important, isn't it? Because as good as Jeremy Corbyn might be, he's not telling people we shouldn't have to borrow to pay for the care of elderly people, to pay for the care of sick and disabled people. This is another way of doing it. The ridiculous point I'm trying to make is that it just goes round and round and round, the merry-go-round, boom and bust, change of government every few years, and it never ends, right?
Yeah, because it's not meant to be. It's not meant to get anywhere. It's meant to go round and round and round. And while you're going round, you are given the impression you're going forward. And then eventually you find yourself back at square one and you say, well, what was all that about? If people just look at the politics over a long period and look at it in country after country, they'll see that loop happening. And you're right that one of the key, or if not the key part of keeping that loop, is controlling money. And this is what I mean when I talk about the new thinking. You see, you've got the postage stamp parties, all of them. And they will, for instance, one will say we need to borrow less money and one will need to borrow more money. But they're both saying we need to borrow money and borrow it, in effect, from the private banking system, which then controls the government. And of course, paying back that money plus interest then locks you in terms of what you can spend on things you would like to spend them on, like social care, etc. So the key is to disconnect government spending from private banks. And you know, they're talking in the Labour manifesto about an investment bank. Well, that investment bank needs to be far more than something that just borrows money and then hands it out. It needs to create it. We need a government bank that creates the currency interest-free and then can distribute it interest-free. And the more that happens, the less the need there will be to go to private banks and borrow it at interest and be under the control of giant corporations. This is the fundamental. And if they don't go down this road, of course, you know, if he's not prime minister, he couldn't, but he can stand there and vehemently argue the case, because he has a platform now, Jeremy Corbyn, to say these things. It's all right, you know, when he's come in from nowhere and they're saying, oh, he's just a lightweight and he's bloody useless and he'd be a disaster. Well, that changed overnight. That concept changed overnight. They'll keep trying to do it in things like the Daily Mail, but that concept changed last night. He's got a platform. Now, he needs to use it, like I said earlier, to say the up to this point unsayable, to speak the unthinkable. None of it's unsayable or unthinkable, but it has been to the political class. This is what needs to happen. And then things can really change, because you're generating money at no interest, and you are borrowing it from nobody because you're creating it, and then you have it to distribute for the things that you'd like to spend it on to make this a better place to live for everybody. This is what I mean by the unsayable and the unthinkable. And there's another great thing about last night, which I've not heard anybody mention so far, but it is early. And that is actually this consciousness shift against anything that is perceived as the establishment continued last night.
Yeah.
In a very interesting way. Because the Labour Party and Jeremy Corbyn were considered to be against the establishment, that they're not in the new thinking way, but they are in terms of the postage stamp in a way. Although if you're on the postage stamp, you are part of the establishment, because that's what the establishment is, the postage stamp mentality. But in Scotland, the Conservatives won seats in Scotland when they were losing them elsewhere, because the Scottish National Party have become the perceived establishment there.
Yeah.
And the force in control.
20 seats they lost, yeah.
There is this antipathy towards anything establishment, anything in a position of ongoing control. It can also be seen last night, as it could be seen with the Brexit vote, and it could be seen with the perception, not the truth, of course, but the perception at the time of Trump. And that's good to note. And I do, again, coming back to Jeremy Corbyn, hope that he now realizes that there is a consciousness shift going on in terms of people's perceptions of things. And instead of having to apologize for the new thinking, not that whether he has new thinking, he's not saying it, I don't know. But instead of apologize for saying these unsayable things up to this point, the public mind, more than ever before, is open to them being said. So go for it, man. Don't hold back. Say what you really think. Stand for what you really stand for, and propose what you really think should happen. And don't say, what will they say if I say this? Or will I lose votes if I say that? And this is a point, Rich, that I mentioned earlier. This inability of the progressive mindset to look in the mirror and question itself, Corbyn does have previous, since he became leader, of clearly saying things to keep people happy that he didn't really believe. I mean, that's why he was really purposely weak in the Brexit campaign, when he was campaigning in theory against coming out, when he's had a whole political career history of saying it should happen. And his brother, you've interviewed many times, of course, is a climate and weather forecaster who is a vehement opponent and exposer of the climate change hoax. And Jeremy Corbyn can't be so close-minded that he doesn't realize that it's not all it's cracked up to be. But he's been pushing on and pushing on with climate change, because that's the progressive mindset belief system that, yeah, climate change, the planet's going to die, we're all killing the planet. Well, this is what I mean by standing for what you believe in. If you think there are questions to ask about the climate change orthodoxy, other things, then say them. And if your progressive supporters say, oh, well, I don't agree with that, well, that's what you have to do. Yeah. It's called leadership.
It's called democracy, too.
It's saying what you believe and taking the consequences instead of telling people what they want to hear. This is what I've seen Corbyn doing in Parliament. And he doesn't do it anything like so much, although he does in progressive things. But certainly in campaigning, he's much more willing to say things. He needs to take this opportunity and become a leader for all people, and not a leader of a progressive mindset, parts of which he may not agree with.
Well, it's interesting you brought up his brother. We've just got a few minutes left. You'll get the last word. But it's interesting you mentioned Piers when he was on last. I mean, I've said privately to Piers, listen, you know my thoughts on elections and some of the flip-flopping that your brother has done, but I don't bear him any personal ill will because I don't know him. And over the years, I've been following geopolitical events since the late 1990s. So I know all about Jeremy Corbyn. As an Irishman, we knew all about him and his willingness to talk to everybody in the north of Ireland, not just Republicans. And I said to Piers on the air, I said, you know what, I'd go out in the morning and vote for him, Piers, if he took on the financial system and if he took on the Zionists. You know, if he highlighted the fact that the Conservative Friends of Israel and the Labour Friends of Israel, you know, how powerful that lobby group is and kicked, you know, advocated kicking him out of the country and kicking him out of parties. And one or two other things, I'd go along and I'd say, look, I was wrong all along. There is a man who might make a difference. And of course, tellingly, and it was one of the most, I suppose, telling sound bites that our programme has had this year, Piers said, well, he more or less agrees with all of that. And it's like, why hasn't he been saying it then? Why didn't he stick up for, you know, Ken Livingston? I mean, George Galloway was on the programme. Incidentally, because we're actually broadcasting live from that constituency, I must mention, no surprise, I've been speaking with George Galloway in the last couple of days, no surprise that Labour held the seat. I think Galloway got 3,000 votes or thereabouts, but he didn't manage to win the seat vacated by his old friend Sir Gerald Kaufman. But, you know, a lot of people are saying, why did you throw him under the bus? You know what the Zionist lobby is and how powerful it is. And Piers is like, yeah, he'd probably agree with all of that. But probably agreeing with it and not saying it, David. You're saying yourself, David Icke is saying this morning loud and clear, it's not good enough anymore to not speak out on these issues.
Yeah, the thing is that he could have made the excuse up to this point that the parties, the parliamentary parties against me, the press is against me, I've got to somehow keep going, so I have to keep quiet about some things to, you know, to mitigate all the other things that are happening. But he doesn't have that excuse now. That's the point I'm making. He has a platform. He has a position of far greater authority, and it must be respect because of what's been achieved against what was predicted. So he has the platform now, and with that platform, there is no longer an excuse to avoid all the things that I've mentioned and all the things you've just mentioned.
Just before we part company this morning, thanks for doing this, by the way. There's a lot of appreciation being expressed on Twitter for you coming on this early in the morning. You're up to your eyes with the book. I know you're approaching a deadline and you're nearly there. I won't say any more than that. In the autumn, you've got three special events planned to mark the launch of the book. People can find out all about those events at davidicke.com. Three evenings. Do you want to just talk about those in the time we have left, David?
Yeah, it would be interesting, Rich, by the time we get round to that in November, where we are as a result of what's happened overnight. The book won't be out in the summer. It will be out at the time of those events in November. I'm working, I sat in this chair at 4 o'clock yesterday morning and got out about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to get it finished as quick as possible. So that's when it will be out. But it will be very interesting to see what's happening then, as a result of what's happened, because a lot of things will have done, because the cookies are in the air at the moment, and we'll see where they come down.
Absolutely right. For information on those events in London, in Manchester and Edinburgh, go to davidicke.com. You'll find all the details there, how to pick up a ticket to mark the launch of the book. As David said, it will be November now. And later this year, of course, he's back on the road in Europe and elsewhere, and that continues into 2018 as well. The worldwidewakeup.com and davidicke.com. Interesting night and morning we've had, mate. Thanks for coming on, and we'll talk again really soon.
Can I just say one more thing?
Go ahead.
You know, if we take our minds back and we take our perceptions back, then all the propaganda has no effect. I've got yesterday's Daily Mail in front of me, and I kept it because it's quite a sight.
Yeah.
The opening front page, this is on election day. The opening front page, your tactical voting guide to boost the Tories and Brexit. Front page headline, let's reignite British spirit. Theresa's rallying call as she warns Corbyn will tax your work, your garden, your home and your inheritance. Turn over. Labour sums don't add up and will cost you £750. Underneath, fear for pound if May falls short. And so it goes on. Now jihadi group called group that called jihadi John beautiful man is backing Corbyn. Fired up Theresa wore more eyeliner than Kenny Everett in drag. That means about another headline. Same paper. Corbyn will tax you while you work. He'll tax your garden. He'll tax your home. And when you pass it to your loved ones, anti-Semitism storm over banner showing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's Labour refused to rip up rights to tackle terror and so on. Why we have to take control back of our borders? Why would you vote for Corbyn? Even his own MPs condemned him. I mean, it's just one after the other, and that's called journalism. But something different happened overnight, because if you take your perceptions back, none of that has any effect.
It obviously doesn't, mate. Continued success with putting the book to bed. Thanks for doing this again. DavidIke.com, folks. DavidIke.com/headlines and theworldwidewakeup.com. Talk real soon, mate. Thanks again.
Cheers, Rich. Bye.
Bye for now. David Icke on the line to us live from the Isle of Wight on a, well, it is in Manchester anyway, glorious Friday morning, June 9th. 2017. If you just came in on the end of that, because you noticed it on social media, both of us will have it on YouTube and on podcast real soon. Just to mention again, we did it live, so things will probably change during the day in terms of numbers and stuff, but centrally it's the same. The Tories fell short of an overall majority. They don't have the seats to form a government. Labour did much better than anticipated. They gained somewhere in the region of an extra 30 seats. We were talking at length there about the things that Jeremy Corbyn can do now as a very, very much a credible opposition party leader, not having to worry about backstabbers on his own backbenches. Fascinating stuff. I'm going to leave you and love you. That was it for this special programme. Join me live on Sunday morning for the Sunday View programme in association with DavidIke.com. Live on Sunday at 11 a.m. UK time. A few things will have happened in the meantime, no doubt, that we'll be reflecting on there. In the meantime, stay with DavidIke.com. Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, The Richie Allen Show on Twitter and on Facebook. And if you keep an eye out, the podcast and David Icke's YouTube channel will have this conversation online, as well as my YouTube channel, real soon. Thank you for listening. Until Sunday morning at 11 a.m. Just before I go, actually, I did say on Wednesday, in fact, I did say on Wednesday that I hope that you get what you want. Whom I was addressing? I was addressing people that their financial circumstances are very difficult and they felt they had a lot riding on the outcome of this election. And I did say on Wednesday, I hope you get what you want. A lot of people will be feeling probably a bit better today about that and about the prospects of the future with respect to, you know, their own personal finances. And again, you know, I hope you get what you want. My position has never changed about elections or about the candidates. And unless there are drastic changes, my position won't change. I'm not stubborn. I don't think I know everything. You know, I'm not dogmatic, but I don't believe we can achieve anything with the system as it is. If that ever changes, I'll be the first to admit I'm wrong. I hope you are somewhat happier today than you were on Wednesday. Right, until Sunday morning, that's it. That's enough for me. You've heard enough from me today. Look after yourselves and one another. Have a magnificent weekend. Until next time. Bye now, bye now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.